Well, greetings. Welcome to The Dividing Line. We may be here, maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. We've got new stuff happening today and no theme song. And I'm not sure if I can perform without a theme song. I mean, I did not realize until today just how very important that actually is. No, I actually normally don't hear it anyway, so it doesn't really matter too much. Hey, you know, yesterday I left the house in the morning, had an appointment in East Valley. My expectation was to come back by the office here after my appointment, and we were going to do The Dividing Line. While I was there, I began receiving reports concerning what was going on in Washington. I was going to be commenting first and foremost primarily on the subject of the Georgia Senate races, and then maybe, I really didn't expect anything to be going on in regards to the certification of the electoral college votes, but as we all know, everything changed, and so we decided it would be best not to do a program yesterday, but instead we would do the program today. And obviously a tremendous amount has happened. More is happening even now as we speak. There is a lot of discussion about the invocation of the 25th Amendment and removing President Trump from office less than 2 weeks before that would happen anyways, and so on and so forth. Without getting into all that right now, because that's all everyone's thinking about, my intention yesterday was to go over it's simply a paragraph of a letter that was written 222 years ago. And 222 years, you know, you travel in Europe, doesn't mean a whole lot. But it does have a lot of meaning for us here in the United States, because this was a letter written the 11th of October, 1798, by John Adams. And of course, the Adams, John, Sam, very important in the early formation of this nation, the writing of the founding documents. And he wrote a letter to the officers of the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Division of the Militia of Massachusetts. And this can be found in Revolutionary Services and Civil Life of General William Hull, New York, 1848, pages 265 and 266. But this is the full context of a couple of lines that I have utilized repeatedly. While our country remains untainted with the principles and manners which are now producing desolation in so many parts of the world, that would probably be in regards to the French Revolution, while she continues sincere and incapable of insidious and impious policy, we shall have the strongest reason to rejoice in the local destination assigned us by Providence. But should the people of America once become capable of that deep simulation towards one another and towards foreign nations, which assumes the language of justice and moderation, while it is practicing iniquity and extravagance, and displays in the most captivating manner the charming pictures of candor, frankness, and sincerity, while it is rioting in rapine and insolence, this country will be the most miserable habitation in the world. Because we have no government armed with power, capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion, avarice, ambition, revenge, and licentiousness would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Oaths in this country are as yet universally considered as sacred obligations. That which you have taken and so solemnly repeated on that venerable ground is an ample pledge of your sincerity and devotion to your country and its government. End quote. I have seen a tremendous amount of frustration, anger, emotion. Many true and right things have been said. Much speculation has been taken as fact. Very few of us were in Washington yesterday. Even those who were there might not have really any idea of what was actually going on. I don't think any of us have any idea what's going on. I have to admit, I saw for the first time the video, the unedited video this morning of the shooting of the woman who died, and I don't understand any of it. You see the person inside shoot her. Right behind her are two fully geared up law officers with semi-automatic weapons aimed the other direction. I mean, I don't know what happened. It did not seem to be an organized thing at all. I mean, the people that got in, what are they going to do? Take selfies? Yeah, that's a real insurrection. That's a real revolution for you. I got into somebody's office and took a selfie. I got a Congress pen. What? Yeah, okay. I don't know, but I do remember one thing. In the year 410, does anyone remember? Pastor Luke thinks, one of my fellow pastors at Apologia Church thinks that I was around in 410, which is why I know church history so well, is it's a firsthand thing. It's not studying it. It's just living it. And anybody remember what happened in 410? It's actually a date that should be on most church history tests because it is really important. Not as important as 325, but very important. In 410, Alaric the Visigoth sacked Rome. Now, when we think of the sacking of Rome, we think of columns of smoke and crumbling buildings and bodies lying in the street. It's not what happened. When Alaric sacked Rome, he basically waltzed in, looked around, said, "Well, Rome, cool," and left. Didn't really damage much in the process. But it was the fact that barbarians, the Barbaroi, the uneducated people from the fringes of the empire, had waltzed into the eternal city, a city that had been unbreached by external forces for far longer than it had been since the British burned the Capitol and the White House. Many, many, many more centuries had passed. There was a huge impact upon the thinking of everyone in the Roman Empire. Part and parcel of that was the uncertainty of the future. We human beings are creatures of habit. And I especially like things to be the way they were. Don't move my cheese. Don't hide my stuff. Don't change how things are done. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But human beings in general are that way. And when Rome fell to the barbarians, there was a tremendous amount of soul searching. The pagans wanted to blame the Christians for that, of course. this is what prompted Augustine's tremendous work, The City of God, and really prompted the publication and explication of a Christian understanding of time rather than Thucydides' type of time of a constant repetition. Augustine promoted a linear view of time with a beginning and an end and a purpose. This was a Christian understanding of God's creative purpose. City of God is one of the chief foundation stones of Western culture. Though the vast majority of people haven't read it, that doesn't mean anything. The vast majority of people's thinking has been determined by what was communicated by that book to our forefathers and for generations and generations before them. And the book was prompted by the Visigoths sacking Rome. As I listened to commentators last night, it seemed to be having the same kind of impact on them. Of course, we watch this stuff in real time. The word about the sacking of Rome would have taken weeks to travel to the remotest portions of the Roman Empire. So things happen much more quickly. And what that means is decisions and actions are taken with significantly less thought. Time for thinking. We are not, you know, I'm a Trekkie. And I love one of the memes that runs around. I see it every couple months. I guess at some point on the Next Generation, someone, whether it was Data or somebody else, mentioned how many teraflops Data was capable of performing, his computer mind. And at the time, it was far more than any computers that existed, but we have now gone far beyond that just in our day, the capacity of modern computers. And so that kind of anachronism, that kind of, oh, well, we couldn't have seen what was coming type thing, is seen whenever we try to look toward the future. As we consider what's going on now and the speed at which computers can make decisions, for example, just a few weeks ago, well, a couple months ago, our best F-16 fighter pilot took on an AI program in a dogfight and lost 5 out of 5 times. Because of how quickly the machines can make decisions. God did not make us to be Commander Datas. He did not make us to think at that speed. Instead, we are to meditate and contemplate and be patient and think things through and talk with other people, do things in community. We aren't meant to be competitions to the machines that we have made. And we don't do well when we try, to be perfectly honest with you. And so what we're watching last night, listening to people, is just, it's just pure emotion. And even when truthful things were said, I caught Tucker Carlson last night. And Tucker Carlson says a lot of really truthful and insightful things. But there's always something missing. The worldview foundation just isn't there. You stumble into stuff, but it can't be consistent without the proper worldview foundation. And so as I considered what has happened, however you interpret what has taken place, I've been very clear. There's very strong evidence in my limited understanding of tremendous chicanery. I saw a graph of the voting from Georgia in November. You compare it with the graph from two nights ago, and look at that. At the same point in time, all of a sudden, they're down, whoa, they're way up ahead, and they never get caught again. And I told a friend, we were watching it as it's going on, and he was going, we got it, man, we got it. And I'm like, no, we don't. Look, we're ahead. There's only, this amount of left. And I said, no, just watch. And this, I told him what was going to happen. And exactly what I said would happen did happen. And so I don't have confidence whatsoever in the electoral system in the United States right now. As long as this system maintains its existence, I don't believe there will be another free election in the United States. I don't believe that. That's my position. You can say, you're just crazy. But I called this stuff in May of last year. So I just simply trying to apply Romans chapter 1 to history, to how socialists act. Okay. That's what I've been trying to do. But that issue aside, as I think about the Equality Act, which will be passed into law within a matter of weeks, and how utterly destructive of the entire fabric of what's left, the tattered fabric of what's left of our society, that will be. End of religious liberty, end of free speech, the massive attack upon young girls that this worldview represents and where it's coming from. I feel the anger that is appropriate, I think, toward naive people who have been fooled into actions and votes that will be so destructive to them, their children, their grandchildren. And they will not recognize this until it's too late. They've been warned. We've tried. We're going to get sick and tired of saying, I told you so, but it's just going to be 40 years of it. And I'm being hopeful on the 40-year part. But in all of the discussion, what is missing is sober, calm, reflective recognition of the foundational worldview issues that are taking place right in front of us. That's what's been so frustrating in watching social media and watching mainstream media. No one addresses anything presuppositionally. No one addresses the foundational stuff. And if you don't address it that way, then the emotions of today will not be the emotions of next week. And so what you say this week won't really have any meaning or any lasting value next week. Because you're only addressing passing feelings rather than addressing things that will be just as important next month and next year as they are now. Now, that's not what gets you the biggest audience. That's not what gets you the biggest splash. That's not what gets you the ratings or the book sales or whatever else. I get that. But that's the only way to actually build something that's long-lasting. That's the only way to pass on to the next generation something that is meaningful and valuable to them. Very, very important. That's why I started off with John Adams. Because as we listen to what Adams is saying to these officers in regards to the subject of oaths, if we are actually trying to understand what he was saying, we find ourselves almost in a different world than we live in today. And that's the point. We have been living in years of transition from the world that understood what gave rise to our liberties and freedoms, and the world that detests what gave rise to our liberties and freedoms. And we are now past the tipping point. We are now into that place where it is a minority of people and becoming a much smaller minority of people who have any understanding whatsoever of what has taken place. What's the biblical description? Men who understood the times. Small minority today. John Adams. Listen what he says. I read it. Did you hear the context? Let's look at it more closely. While our country remains untainted of the principles and manners which are now producing desolation in so many parts of the world. I think he was talking especially about the French Revolution, which a lot of people, how many people in the United States know almost anything about the French Revolution? It was ahead of its time, which is why it burned itself out and resulted in, you know, eventually Napoleon and everything else. But it was ahead of its time, but in many ways so similar in its motivations to what we're seeing today. Blood was flowing the streets, not from two armies fighting each other, but from totalitarian styles of thinking. Very much like what we're hearing today. Very much like the voices we hear today. So he says, while she continues sincere and incapable of insidious and impious policy, we shall have the strongest reason to rejoice in the local destination assigned us by Providence. Now, just who today would speak about our place in this world as being our local destination assigned us by Providence? This is the natural language of John Adams speaking to military people, to the officers of the militia. Assigned us by Providence. But should the people of America once become capable of that deep simulation towards one another. The language is even such that, to be honest, a lot of Americans today struggle to understand what's being said. And towards foreign nations, which assumes the language of justice and moderation. That's almost prophetic. So, deep simulation towards one another. Dishonesty. Hypocrisy, acting one way, but thinking another. And this kind of deep simulation, which assumes the language of justice and moderation. That's always the language. All about justice. All about doing the right thing. While it is practicing iniquity and extravagance. Who even uses the word iniquity today? And isn't extravagance a good thing? So this simulation that he speaks of uses certain words of itself, but it lives differently and displays in the most captivating manner the charming pictures of candor, frankness, and sincerity, while it is rioting in rapine and insolence, this country will be the most miserable habitation in the world. Is there anyone left in this nation that does not just assume at the start that if you're talking to a politician and their lips are moving, they're lying? We just automatically, politician. Oh, the politician lied. The politician twisted the truth. The politician's making millions of dollars by selling access to their influence. Well, that's what being a politician is, isn't it? And he says, once that happens, this country will be the most miserable habitation in the world. And then the words that we've quoted many times before. Because we have no government armed with power, capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion. What Adams is saying is, there is no government, no matter how powerful, that can contend with human passions that are unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, and licentiousness would break the strongest cords of our Constitution. As a whale goes through a net, so that the net there is the Constitution. And it cannot, you cannot design one that does not have the bridling power of morality and religion to control the passions of men. And then he says what I've quoted over and over again, which I think should be placed upon a tombstone someplace. As we lay to rest the corpse of the Constitution of the United States, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. This is one of the framers of our nation, a person with a finger upon the pulse of what gave us a constitutional form of government that lasted more than two centuries. And think of the centuries that it lasted over. Think of the advancements. Think of the changes in the world. There was a tremendous amount of wisdom. And that wisdom included the recognition of the necessity of religion, of morality, a recognition of providence, necessity of all these things. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. I simply have to ask, is this a moral and religious nation any longer? No. So of necessity, if John Adams was right, what must be the result? Some new form of government. The Constitution cannot survive when a sufficient number of people living within its sphere of influence want its destruction. And that is what we saw in Georgia. The men who were elected, who will swear the oath, and that's what this is about, oaths. It's sort of funny. They will swear an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States, and yet it is actually their intention to destroy it. To utterly destroy. If you embrace the idea that we no longer have to worry about the intentions of the words, if you will apply postmodern forms of linguistic exegesis, which means it means whatever you feel like it means, then you are not supporting the Constitution of the United States. You are destroying the Constitution of the United States. You are a traitor. And all three branches, well, the presidency, the two houses, the legislative, are now under the control, or will be under the control in 2 weeks, of radical leftists who have already said that one of their first priorities is to pass something called the Equality Act. The Equality Act is a moral evil worthy of the Reichstag under Hitler. It is. It's that immoral. It is that perverse. Absolutely perverse in its worldview. And the two men who were elected, one of whom claims to be a Christian, who is a formal heretic, and yet was supported by well known people simply because of the color of his skin. So that's what that was Joseph Smith's problem. If he had just been the right color, Mormonism would be 10 times the size it is right now, right? No, of course not. Color of the skin does not change the evil of the worldview. And so when you see Jackie Hill Perry and Lecrae out there promoting this kind of desperately evil worldview, you know great deception is in the land. Great deception is in the land. The Equality Act, how long have I been telling people? How long have I been thankful that there's no way it could get passed with a Republican president and a Republican Senate? Well, Joe Biden, who himself said in 2019 that the greatest human rights issue of our day is transgender rights, had said, assuming that he would not have the Senate, that he would implement as much of the Equality Act by executive order as he could. Now he's got not have to do that. He will be able to put into law a level of immorality and insanity that the world has only seen in some smaller European nations. And of course, that will then be pushed onto other nations through the use of foreign aid as a stick to require them to get on board. We unfortunately use our wealth, which we don't have any longer and won't have even pretense to for very long, to promulgate evil across the face of the earth. That's what we're doing. But the two new senators from Georgia have made it very, very clear that they will support this, and so it will become law. At which point, the reality of what we have said for years and years will become tested. We will be testing where we draw the line when it comes to what the government says and the immorality of law. Because the Equality Act is something that we can only call people to repent of. In fact, I would say to anyone listening to my voice, if you voted for someone who would vote for, approve, sign, whatever terminology you want to use, the Equality Act, and you claim to be a Christian, you need to repent. You have engaged in sin. Oh, you're so political. This has nothing to do. See, we used to live in a day. Remember back when I was young, what you were told was, if you go to somebody's home or something like that, what are the things they ever talked about? Religion and politics. Don't talk about religion. You can talk about sports. You can talk about the weather. You can talk about your kids. Religion and politics got to be kept completely separate, right? And many of us were raised in a context where we pretended that religion and politics were two completely different things. One never had any impact upon the other. And when you have a government that is purposefully small and liberty producing, you don't have to get involved in too much of that. But the reality is that when someone wants to make it possible for your 12-year-old daughter to be injected secretly at school with testosterone, while at school she is called Jeff, but they don't tell you. And without your permission, they begin altering her body, maybe even giving her puberty blockers, which, by the way, also stop brain development. Massively increase probabilities of later in life cancers and every kind of functional breakdown of the human body. Massive life decreasers, life expectancy decreasers. Then all of a sudden, you have to ask yourself a question. Did you have a religious duty to protect your daughter? Or is that just politics? You can't maintain that artificial distinction that doesn't actually exist. Because the worldview of secularism, the psychological autonomy of postmodern man, where you can claim that what's happening in your brain is actually determinative as to your actual gender, and that you can demand that people around you change the very language they speak so as to affirm you in today's decisions, because it may be different next week or the month after or a year after, whatever it might be. But your personal affirmation is the most important thing, and everyone is to bow down to you. This atomization of our culture, this destruction of everything that once bound us together, that made us a nation, that allowed for law that would be, that could be applied equally, is destroyed. It's gone. The glue that held everything together has been rotted out, chipped away purposefully, without a lot of people noticing. And it all has to do with worldview. There's all sorts of different words that are used. Normally, they're stolen from German philosophical works and eventually make their way over in some way. But we're talking about your worldview. And yes, Christians talk about worldview more than almost anybody else does. But that doesn't mean that we act on worldview more than almost anybody else does. It is possible to simply imbibe a worldview without ever really thinking about consistency, first principles, presuppositional concepts, nothing. You just imbibe it. That's why the government wants your children, so they can cause them to imbibe a worldview that will make them impervious. It's like a massive vaccination that actually works against Christian truth. That's their intention. And do not think that now that they have been given unbridled, unstoppable, ultimate authority, that they will not move to end homeschooling, to end Christian schooling. I've got an article on my list. One of the groups that has the closest attachment to and ear of the incoming Biden regime is what we used to call governments in third world countries. We used to use administration, because administration would be the administration of the continuing body of law of the United States. I would call this a regime, because it is their intention not to be bound by what once defined this nation. It is a revolution. A revolution has taken place, but it took place from the inside. Revolution could be fought with weapons if there was an army invading from outside, which will happen slowly, I think. UN, I would not at all be surprised to see Chinese troops on our streets at some point in the future. I can guarantee you the folks in San Francisco would invite them in. But we've had a revolution that was internal. It was a revolution that John Adams unknowingly seemed to predict the nature of a long time ago. And that revolution has been produced by and continues to produce a worldview that requires its inculcation at an early age. That's why they want your children. That's why they've been successful, is because we gave them our children. And so we look at the next generation and we don't understand why. How can you just simply buy into socialism? How can you think this is going to work? How can you not know history? Because they took over the educational systems a long time ago. And we just enjoyed the freedom that gave us. And so they will come after the homeschoolers. They will come after the Christian schools. Like I said, I have an article in here where one of these groups close to the Biden administration is saying that all forms of accreditation. Remember this? Remember when I was on with was on Wretched and I said 5 years and I was a little pessimistic? Yeah. All accreditation should be based upon acceptance of real science in all areas. And just be prepared. Once the Equality Act passed, real science is that a 6'2", 17-year-old male who weighs 220 pounds can play on the girls' rugby team, even if that means he will kill every other girl on the other team. Doesn't matter. Science. That's what's coming. And so if you don't accept that, then you can't be accredited. And I mean, this has been coming for a long, long time. If you didn't see this, you're just not even looking. But who could have seen it was easy to see it would be the sexual issues, because rebellion against the natural order and against God's law. What's the one example that Paul gives that shows the deepest level of twisting of the creator-creation relationship in Romans chapter 1? That's what people miss. This wasn't, as J.D. Greer said, a whispering about sexual sin. It was an example of how idolatry can twist the most definitional aspects of man's existence. That's what Romans 1 is about when it talks about both male homosexuality and female lesbianism. That's why it's where it is. It's not in the lists. It's an example of the depth. And that's why homosexuality, the gay mirage, transgenderism, all of these things are at the central core of what now is being demanded and will be demanded by law, thanks to every one of you who voted for these people. It's on you. You will be held accountable for this. You need to understand. You will be held accountable for this. Will be in law. That makes it an immoral law and therefore one that must be resisted. Once you place pure rebellion to God's most basic revelation of man and woman into law, you make that law stand in direct opposition to God and direct opposition to his truth. But you put that in law and you are shouting to the world, we are autonomous. We have gotten rid of every last vestige of what embarrasses us so much. And that is our Judeo-Christian past. We are sorry to the world that we ever affirmed these things. And once you no longer have that God who has revealed his will and has given us a revelation of his truth in his word, you have to ground human value and law somewhere else. And all you have left is either the utter chaos of billions of autonomous humans making it up as they go. That collapses almost instantly. Not into a soft totalitarianism, but a full, hard totalitarianism. Very, very quickly. There's no place else to go. You've got to get your rights from someplace, and they come from the state, and so the state tells you who you are, what to do, where to go. Because you gave it all up. You did not realize where it came from. You were lied to about your own nature. You get what you bought. You get what you pay for. That is what is heading our direction. And I'm talking within a few weeks. Now, will there be immediate lawsuits? Of course there will be. Of course there will be. But someone just stop and tell me something. What's the worldview of the vast majority of judges and people involved in the judiciary in the United States today? Even those that call themselves conservative, what's their worldview? Is it robust and sufficient in the acknowledgement of God to withstand the kind of pressure that we placed upon them? No. In fact, the vast majority have come. Do you think it's just coincidence that it's the big law schools that have been so focused upon by the progressive leftists and the promotion of critical theory and intersectionality and all the other insanity that comes along with it? Of course not. So there will be lawsuits for a while, but they won't last long. And you might say, but we've got the court. No, we don't. At best, it's 5-4 right now. And that won't last long. I know some of you are going, just, I hope they overplay their hand because next election will kick their teeth in. I'm sorry. I know. I hear you. Stevia fruit punch. For those of you going, wonder what's in the bottle. It's water with something called stir in it. Fruit punch. There you go. Just to keep certain people at certain websites from going too crazy. I hear you. I just have one word for you that should strike fear in the heart of any person. California. California. What is California today? Is there a single Republican holding statewide office in California? The answer is no. Where did Ronald Reagan come from? California. What state was he governor of? California. What state did he carry when he ran for the presidency? California. Is it possible to even think of anybody but a Democrat carrying the state of California today? No. Why? Because you have a one-party system. When one party wants to maintain absolute and total control, they put their people in the positions to make sure that only their side can possibly have any shot at winning any election. They've done it in California. And who is the new vice president? Former senator from California and former attorney general of the state of California, the very same person that went after the people who exposed Planned Parenthood, Kamala Harris. And so before November, over and over, I was saying, not as a matter of politics, as a matter of worldview, this is an election about whether there will ever be an election again. Oh, there will be election. There will be an election in 2022. Of course there will be. Just like there was an election in Georgia. And I said to my friends, unless that system has been scrapped, I know what's going to happen on January 5th. And it happened exactly as predicted. And it'll happen in 2022. It doesn't matter what you do. One party rule, make sure. And of course, you know some of the processes. You have packed court, new states, new senators, all on the same side, so that even if something should happen with voting, you can't get voting machines in all the right places and stuff like that. You still maintain control. You know how to do it. They know how to do it. They've done it in California. That's a big state. It's bigger than a lot of nations in the world. So they've got all the experience in the world. And as far as I can see, that's it. I honestly, personally, and look, I do theology primarily. I'm just talking worldview stuff here. So I'm just standing back going, as far as I can tell, that's it. So what do we do now? Well, Jeff Durbin was in Washington. It's interesting. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, but I saw a Facebook Live thing he was doing. And he was saying that, and I saw this from a number of people, if you weren't actually over at the Capitol, you didn't know what was going on. They were talking to lots of people, interviewing lots of people, seeing that the same thing that I was talking about, a lot of the people that were there and are angry and frustrated at the stealing of the election still have a completely secular worldview to go along with that. So they don't really have any meaningful solutions. And one of the things that Jeff said in reporting on all of that was we have to focus upon our local context. Instead of all this energy toward the national level and overarching stuff and things like that, you've got to be talking to your local magistrates. You've got to be, well, obviously the most local you have is your own family, your own church, your own community, your own city, then your own county. And then you start getting pretty big when you get to your own state. But obviously the thought in the back of everybody's mind is, okay, but the feds are coming after us. Yeah. And what's that going to look like? I don't know. There are only so many feds. And you can't imprison half the population. That's not going to work for you. They realize that that's just not a possibility. So how are they going to do this? Will they overplay their hand? I'm sure that they will. Will that change anything? No, we have to look at taking stands locally. And all of that involves prayerfully engaging those around us and not with the old style four spiritual laws. All this stuff doesn't have anything to do with how we live lifestyle evangelism. But with a powerful proclamation, Christ or chaos? It's Christ or chaos. That's really our choice. And then when the chaos comes and everybody cries out for order, if the only choice that is given to you is Emperor Palpatine, then you better recognize that Christ is the one that will give you the proper freedom, not Emperor Palpatine. But they're going to only want to give you one choice. This is, I remember, I don't know, 2 months ago, maybe only 6 weeks ago, I talked about, you know, living in a state of daily schizophrenia. For those of you younger, you don't quite feel it the way those of us in my age bracket and above do. But you wake up in the morning, and literally, in my experience is, you wake up in the morning, and there is a point at time in time where all of a sudden, as you are becoming more conscious, all of a sudden you realize, oh, yeah. It's 2021, and oh, my nation just became a socialist nation. And oh, I can't even plan for the future anymore because I don't know what types of controls are going to be placed upon us. And, you know, I don't know when my freedom of expression is going to disappear. I am absolutely certain that here at this ministry, we will be having to use other means of teaching and proclamation than we're using right now very quickly. Because the social media giants, I can guarantee you, as soon as Ossoff, who, by the way, is the most, if you want to see what it means for judgment to be placed upon the United States, when you think of the Senate, 100 most powerful people in the nation, you look at one of our senators here from Arizona and then look at Ossoff. And the term worthless, as it was used historically, of someone with no accomplishments, nothing, is the only way to describe what's going on. It's shocking, just stunning. But as soon as he was elected, I can guarantee you, Twitter, Google, Facebook were all like, yes, whew, not going to have to worry about any more investigations or anything. We are on the same side, and we're going to, man, we've got the list ready to go. And let's just start bouncing people out right and left. Let's just start silencing them everywhere they go. Everywhere they go. And that's what's coming. That's what's coming. So that local world, your church, your family, your local community, they can't really stop you there. Oh, they can make it harder to communicate. I mean, our church is spread out all over this valley. We've got to find, you know, I'm not sure smoke signals really work here in Arizona, but we'll find some way of figuring it out eventually. Hidden messages in rice cakes or whatever. But that's where the focus has to be, is that local place. And we have to remain faithful in the midst of it. This is not the first time things like this have happened. From a church history perspective, I'm really glad I have a church history perspective. I really, really do. Because if I didn't have that, I look at a lot of these Trump supporters, and without the Christian worldview, the fear and panic would be absolutely overwhelming, just overwhelming. I mean, this is not a time to be living with the television on. It's a time to be living with your Bible open on your lap. That's what needs to be being done right now. And I can tell you, I've been doing Revelation. I think I mentioned to you last time that instead of like a Bible reading thing, I'm doing a translation thing in the New Testament. And on Twitter, for as long as I can, then it'll be Parlay. I've been doing short little, and I guess on Parlay, I could That's what I call it. I mean, that's the French. That's the French, you know, parlor. It's parler. But I suppose I should do it on that and then link to it on Twitter. Because, I mean, I'm going to be gone on Twitter before long. Because you can do 1,000 characters. And I've gotten pretty good at 280. Remember 140? 140 really stunk. I mean, 140 pretty much defied any kind of meaningful expression of almost any truth at all. It was bad. But I've been going through, I'm in Revelation chapter 2. It's popped up on the screen here. Let me just take a moment or two. I want to finish with something encouraging, but real. Not falsely encouraging, but real. not sure what that is there. You trying to get accordance up? There's accordance. Oh, okay, all right. There you go. Now I can help you out there. And to the angel of the church of Smyrna, write. Thus says the first and the last, the one who became dead and has come to life. I love that description. I know your thlipsis. It's actually thlipsin, but thlipsis is the vocabulary form you learn. Tribulation, trials. These are the bad things of life. And your poverty. Your poverty. But you are rich. So you have to put those two together. Some of the richest people I know are poor people. And some of the poorest people I know are rich people, if you know what I mean. And the blasphemion, the blasphemy from those calling themselves Jews, but they are not, but are the synagogue to Satana, the synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, in order that you might be tested and have tribulation. Hey, Merodeca, 10 days. Hey, Meron Deca. 10 days. Now, obviously, you realize it's not meant to be taken literally in the sense of, okay, all right, this is day one, so we're getting ready for day two, then day three. No, it's a specific limited period of time. And God's in control of when that is. Be faithful, pistos, akri thanatu. Be faithful unto death. And I will give to you the Stephanon tes zoes, crown of life. Crown of life. Here to one of the early churches, you're going to have tribulation. Some of you could be imprisoned. You're going to be tested. Be faithful unto death. I was mentioning to John Cooper, he has a song, Skillet has a song, You Ain't Ready. You Ain't Ready for Me. And we were talking about what was going on in the world, and I said, we ain't ready. We ain't ready for this. But God is. He can sustain. He who overcomes, the victor, ha nikon, U me adikethe, will not be hurt. That's Strong's form of denial, or subjunctive strong denial. The one who overcomes will not, same form Jesus uses in John chapter 10, will not be harmed by the second death. To thanatu, to deuteru, will not be harmed by the second death. then just really quickly down here, verse 13, I wonder why there are not, I think it's because of Herod Antipas. I think that's where the problem is. Why are there not more Christian children named Antipas? Have you ever wondered about that? Because, right here in Revelation 2:13, I know where you are dwelling, where the throne of Satan is, and you Krateis, you hold fast my name, and you have not denied my faith, even, the use of Kai is a not a connective, but even in the days of Antipas, ha martus mu, my martyr, ha pistos, my faithful martyr, ha martas mu, ha pistos mu, my faithful martyr, who was killed in your midst, where Satan dwells. So here he's writing to a church. And was Antipas one of the elders? Probably. I mean, it's not just elders that die. But killed in your midst? Yeah, probably. I mean, we don't know for certain. But I wonder. In the midst. Okay, you held fast my name, did not deny my faith, even when members of your fellowship that you knew by name were murdered in your midst, you remained faithful. But isn't it interesting? Because this is important. But I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block for the sons of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, to commit acts of immorality. So you also have some who in the same way hold the teaching of the Nicolaitans. Remember earlier, Jesus said, I hate the teaching of the Nicolaitans. Ever thought about Jesus hating false doctrine? Well, he does. Therefore, repent, or else I am coming to you quickly, and I'll make war against them with the sword of my mouth. The sharp two-edged sword coming forth from his mouth. Even in the midst of persecution, the church is called to be pure in her teaching. There is a devastatingly dangerous mindset amongst many people that as long as you're being persecuted, we don't have to worry about that doctrine stuff anymore. Don't have to worry about that doctrine stuff anymore. And I don't know how many times I've told you, but as we are forced into a smaller and smaller cultural space, we're going to be pushed together with more and more people who call themselves Christians. And that means we must be crystal clear on what defines the faith, and that includes the gospel. There will be tremendous pressure. And how many people have already collapsed? We can start naming names. How many people have already collapsed on the indispensable definitional nature of the gospel itself? And there's going to be more. There is going to be more. Well, alrighty then. So, what do I want to leave you with? We, if we are to honor God's truth, must be thinking. We must be. We cannot any longer have the idea that all this Christian worldview formation stuff is over here someplace, and the rest of our life is over here. We will not stand firm. And we will be called radicals, because once you put those two things together, you will be a radical. But that's where the strength is. That's where the power lies. And God cleanse us of our love of stuff. If we are cleansed of our love of stuff, there is nothing that can touch us. I've preached that message for years, and we're going to have to keep preaching it because it's getting real. It's getting real. Real practical thing, said this a million times, download and archive. Download and archive. when we do, especially when we do teaching stuff, I've been doing a lot of teaching this hour, but I'm going to be doing some teaching on basic issues about Mormonism. I was going to do the Pope thing today, but that would require pushing the boundaries. We'll get to it on the next one. The Pope put out a tweet, a video tweet, that once again demonstrates just where Francis really is in his thinking. We need to talk about that. It's really important. I think Roman Catholics need to be thinking about what Pope Francis did is very much in line with Vatican II. There's no question about that, but with the most left-hand side of Vatican II. So when we do teaching and stuff like that, archive and save. Because right now you can just go, just look it up on YouTube later. that may not be a possibility. That may not be a possibility. So do that. I think you will be wise. Okay, kids. Thank you very much for watching the program today. Not sure what the schedule in the future is, but we will be as faithful as we can to be here for you, addressing issues, getting back to a couple things we haven't covered for a little while. Appreciate your watching. Appreciate your support. Appreciate your prayers. Remain faithful. Jesus Christ is still on his throne. We'll see you next time. God bless.